Gentlemen, please begin.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to the presentation of our full year results for 2011. In broad terms, I'm, of course, as you would expect, very proud to present a record set of numbers, and perhaps even more importantly so, I am happy to confirm that our performance throughout the second half of last year was at least as good as in the first half of the year. I indicated in previous calls last year that our order books were in good shape, and we have indeed not seen any slowdown of the demand in our key markets. It is also rewarding to see that our efforts over the past few years to position Umicore in growth segments have started to pay off, and in several segments, we actually grew faster than the market. In total, our revenues grew by almost 15% and reached a record level of close to 2.3 billion euro. Revenue growth obviously was the key driver behind the earnings increase. Our recurring EBIT reached a record level of 416 million euro, while EPS set a new record at 2.69 euro per share. In the course of last year, we stepped up our investment and R&D efforts as we started to execute the Vision 2015 strategy. Capital expenditures were 213 million euro and R&D expenses 157 million, which corresponds to more than 6% of revenues. Further in the presentation, I will provide you with an update of the major developments in respect of our strategic growth initiatives. I will also give you more details regarding the cash flows and the balance sheet. Suffice to say at this point in time that we continue to generate sufficient cash flows to fund significant growth programs, return cash to the shareholders through buyback and dividends, while keeping at the same time a strong balance sheet. Considering the growth profile of the company, this is, I believe, worth highlighting once again. Considering the record performance, the strong cash flows and balance sheet, the board has decided to propose the shareholders to approve a dividend of 1 euro per share in respect of the full year 2011. This proposal recognizes our outstanding performance last year, and as you know, it is our policy not to scale back dividend payments. It also shows our confidence in the future development and the performance of the company. The graphs on slide three show the evolution over the years of our revenue and recurring EBIT, and I will actually comment on specific business developments in a moment. Our safety performance, and I'm now turning to slide number four, showed some improvement in terms of severity rate, while the accident frequency was slightly higher than last year. As I mentioned in previous calls, we have launched a number of new safety initiatives across the group with the aim of creating a deep-rooted safety culture and make Umicore an accident-free workplace by 2015. I'm encouraged that a number of sites, a number of industrial sites and business units have already turned in a perfect safety scorecard in 2011. In the course of last year, the number of employees increased by 186, or approximately 1.25%, and the increase was actually more pronounced in the fully consolidated companies. It was 6% year-on-year, reflecting the growth in production in the existing sites, the startup of a number of new facilities, and the resources required to work on new projects. In contrast, the workforce of associate companies decreased somewhat. On the environmental front, we recently decided to build a biological water treatment plant in Hoboken, Belgium, and the investment of about 15 million euro will complement the existing water treatment facilities, and as we continue to debottleneck the plant, it will allow us to keep increasing process volumes while at the same time improving the environmental performance of our operations. We are also making steady progress against the stretched sustainability targets that we have set ourselves for 2015, and it is motivating to see that our progress in terms of sustainability has once again been recognized externally. We were, for instance, recently ranked by Corporate Knights among the top 10 most sustainable companies in the world, and this for the second year in a row. In the course of last year, we stepped up both our R&D efforts and investments in line with the growth agenda. The increase was most notable in recycling, with the startup, for instance, of the UHT pilot test phase, in rechargeable battery materials, where new materials are being developed for electrified vehicle applications, and in catalysis, where research and investments are driven to a large extent by upcoming tighter emission norms. As a result, the R&D spend increased to some 157 million euro, which corresponds to some 6% of revenues excluding metal. Capital expenditures exceeded 200 million euro, and given the growth investments that are currently in the pipeline, it is reasonable to expect that CapEx would be at least at the same high level in 2012. Let me now turn to the performance of the various business groups. In Catalysis, and I'm now on slide 8, revenues grew 16% and outpaced the car production, which grew globally by some 3% year on year. As we had anticipated, there was no slowdown towards the end of the year, and we continue to see solid demand today. You will recall that auto production in the first half of last year was affected by a shortage of certain components following the tsunami in Japan, and the shortfall in production was partly made up for in the second half of the year. Clearly, it was rewarding to see Umicore continue to outperform the market. This was most notable in Europe and in North America. In Europe, we continue to benefit from our technology leadership in light-duty diesel and other and advanced engine configurations. It is also worth mentioning that in the course of last year, we secured a significant number of contracts for Euro 6 light-duty diesel, and this bodes well for the growth of the business in the midterm. In North America, we continue to benefit from a favorable customer mix and the trend to more fuel-efficient engines. The North American market continues to show clear signs of strength in terms of demand. In South America and Asia, our sales were mostly in line with the market development. Car production in Asia was slightly down as the production shortfall in Japan in the first part of the year could not be fully made up for in the second half, and growth in China, as you know, was much lower than in prior years, partly due to certain government incentive programs being phased out. Recurring EBIT grew 15% year-on-year, driven in Catalysis, driven by the revenue growth in both automotive catalysts and precious metals chemistry. The latter benefited from strong demand for automotive catalyst precursors and further market penetration of its precious metals catalysts used in life science applications. We continue to expand catalyst production capacity worldwide, and we continue to add capabilities to cope with growing demand and tighter legislation. As an example, expansion, as you know, is ongoing in China at our Suzhou site, where new capacity will come online in mid-2012 to address the growth in light-duty applications primarily. We're also adding HDD production capabilities there to support the business that was awarded to us. The new test and development center, which is being built in Suzhou too, should also be operational in mid-2012. We have also recently decided to make a significant investment in Brazil to expand and modernize our testing capabilities in the region and address new emission standards for both light and heavy-duty applications. And, as you already know, we are adding HDD production capacity in Europe to serve the Euro 6 business that we have secured in the region, and the new capacity should come on stream mid this year with a production ramp-up scheduled in 2013. In energy materials, I'm now on slide 10, revenue growth accelerated from 9% in the first half to 18% in the second half of 2011. And that is mostly driven by, that was mostly driven by the demand for rechargeable battery materials, which took off in the second part of the year. Other trends were mostly the same as in the first half, except perhaps for tool materials, and on a full year basis, the revenues in energy materials grew by 14%. We saw continued strength in the chemical plating and catalyst applications served by the ceramics and chemicals business line, with growing sales of nickel compounds in particular. Sales of cobalt powders used in tools slowed down somewhat in the second half due to inventory adjustments at the customers, despite a healthy demand from the automotive industry. Sales of cathode materials grew fast in the second half of the year, driven mainly by strong demand for NMCs used in both portable electronics and automotive applications. This, of course, bodes well for the new capacity that will be coming on stream shortly in Korea. Also, the fast market penetration of tablet computers and touch phones, or in other words, those portable devices that require very high energy density, is supporting the demand for the high-end materials that we are producing. This being said, the pressure on prices remains high. In electro-optic materials, sales of germanium substrates continue to grow, and the demand remains solid both for satellite and concentrator photovoltaic applications. On the other hand, the negative trend continued in germanium blanks used in infrared materials. Sales in that segment were down substantially due to the drastic reduction in government-sponsored orders, and given the market developments, we announced back in December our intention to consolidate the optics production in the U.S., where the majority of our customers are located. In thin film products, the market introduction of rotary target technology for coatings used in display, glass, and PV applications continues to make progress, although I need to say that we saw some of our customers delaying investment in new coating capacity due to the high level of economic uncertainty currently prevailing. As I had indicated in previous calls, we have intensified our R&D efforts in energy materials to develop and test new materials and to develop new processes. This, combined with high product qualification costs as well as the startup cost for the new facilities, has somewhat dented the margins, which explains to a certain extent the EBIT development in the course of 2011. The results of the business group were also impacted by the weakness of the U.S. dollar against the euro and against Asian currencies, and was also impacted and were also impacted by the natural disasters in Japan and the U.S. that have affected certain of our customers and operations. The rechargeable battery materials business has been nurtured as part of the cobalt and specialty materials business unit, and is now ideally positioned for fast growth. And now that the business has attained a certain critical mass, considering also its very specific technology focus, we have decided to make it a fully-fledged business unit. It will have its headquarters in South Korea, close to the market and close to our existing operations, which should further enhance our ability to respond to rapid changes in the marketplace. Our investments in rechargeable battery materials will continue at a fast pace to cope with the growing demand for lithium-ion-related materials. The new production lines in Korea are now ready for startup, and we are preparing, as we mentioned a while ago too, we are preparing for the expansion of precursor production capacity. Turning to performance materials, we have to distinguish between the fully consolidated business and the non-consolidated participation in Element 6 Abrasives. With the picture, I must say that was relatively unchanged in the second half compared to what I described to you in mid-2011. In the fully consolidated businesses, revenues grew 6% and recurring EBIT was up by 3%.
This reflects the recovery in building products, which started to take shape in Europe last year, down from the trough that we had seen in 2010, and the demand for surface-treated facade products used in high-end architectural projects continues to grow both in Europe and overseas markets. We have therefore decided to build a new production line on our site in Viviez in France for surface-treated zinc, and I expect the new line to be operational in about 2 years' time. Sales in electroplating were strong too, both in decorative and electronic applications, although we noticed some slowdown towards the end of the year in the demand for materials going into PCBs. That may be partly due to the floods in Thailand, which affected that entire industry. In technical materials, sales grew well above GDP, driven by the recovery in the electrical equipment industry. In platinum engineered materials, revenues were slightly lower than in 2012, but the year-on-year comparison is made difficult by the fact that our sales depend on timing of new investment projects at the customers. The fundamentals look good, with the projected continued growth in display applications, and in particular for small touch panels. We are therefore continuing to prepare the business for growth, with the opening of a new platinum workshop in Yokohama at the end of last year, and further investments being made in Germany this year. In zinc chemicals, sales of zinc powders and oxides grew as the demand in applications such as chemicals, tires, and anti-corrosive paint for containers continued to recover. Margins, however, were affected by lower premiums on end products and less favorable supply conditions for the recycling feed materials. Sales of zinc powders used in alkaline batteries were down on the record levels of 2010. You can actually skip slide 13, which addresses some of the investments in performance materials that I've just described. Last and not least, let me now turn to the recycling business group, which produced a stellar performance in 2011, and I had to be a bit creative in choosing superlatives to describe the performance of the recycling business, having used the words outstanding and remarkable a number of times in recent past already. Supply for the precious metals refining operations was abundant, as I indicated in previous calls, and the performance in the second half was very similar to that of the first half, with a combination of higher process volumes, higher margins, and higher received metal prices. Compared to 2010, we processed a higher proportion of high-margin recyclables and industrial byproducts, such as complex residues from the mines. We also had a very strong performance in the jewelry and industrial metals business unit, with high demand for silver-based products used in industrial applications, higher sales of products used in high-end jewelry, and given the uncertainty that we see in the financial markets, there was also significant demand for investment products. Finally, the high precious metal prices continued to boost the availability of supply for recycling. Compared to last year, the results of our precious metals management operations were also higher, reflecting good trading conditions and continued high demand for investment bars. As you know, the ultra-high temperature pilot smelter was commissioned in September of 2011, and we have started the testing phase to, one, fine-tune the technology itself, and two, test a number of new input streams or blends. And it is fair to expect that investments will continue at a high pace in Hoboken in Belgium, with the modernization and expansion of the sampling facility, and, as I mentioned in my introduction, the construction of a biological water treatment plant. Both of these investments should eventually enable a further expansion of processing capacity. It is also worth noting that legislation in respect of spent batteries or spent electronic devices continues to tighten, which eventually should also support the growth of the business. Let me now comment very briefly on the financials. You can raise some more questions about that later during the Q&A session. And I'm now on slide 17, which illustrates graphically the evolution of recurring EPS and dividends that I described earlier in the presentation. The non-recurring EBIT on slide 18 was €1 million positive, with actually non-cash impairments of metal inventories and restructuring charges being more than offset by one-offs such as the proceeds from the sale of our Nearstar subscription rights. As I mentioned in the introduction too, we generated very strong cash flows, and we actually generated very strong pre-tax operating cash flows in 2011 of close to €600 million, as you see from the waterfall chart on page 19. This was more than sufficient to fund our capital expenditures of €213 million, fund some additional working capital requirements, and at the same time return cash to the shareholders in the form of both dividends and share buyback, and reduce the debt levels by almost €100 million. In the course of the second half, we acquired slightly more than 3 million Umicore shares at an average price of €30 per share. As a result of the strong cash flows, the net debt at the end of December was €267 million, which represents approximately half of the annual EBITDA. Clearly, the balance sheet, the strong balance sheet and our ability to generate substantial free cash flows year in, year out, will stand us in good stead as we pursue an ambitious growth strategy. You will recall from the Vision 2015 presentation some 18 months ago that the strategy would be executed in three distinct phases: one of preparation, currently ongoing; another phase of performance; and finally, one of acceleration. As we will soon be transitioning between the first of these two phases, I thought it would be also useful to recap where we stand. And I'm now on slide 22. Sorry. We're stepping up our investments as announced and have reached a certain number of significant milestones with the completion of the UHT pilot, the expansion of our production and research capabilities in energy materials and automotive catalysts. Similarly, we have made significant strides in qualifying new product technologies for battery applications, in particular for those materials that will be used in electrified vehicle applications, and we have also qualified a number of new technologies and systems in catalysis, in particular those that will be used in upcoming to treat upcoming emission norms, and that bodes, of course, very well for the future, for the investments that we have made. We expect the growth to be also supported by environmental norms and legislation, and in that respect, too, we could notice some progress with, for instance, the recast in Europe of the WEEE directive, which over time should enhance the collection and recycling rates of spent electric and electronic devices. The same is true for batteries, although it will probably take some more time to get to decent collection rates and recycling rates, and we're also preparing for that in the long term. All in all, we are well on track to achieve our mid- and long-term growth ambitions, and the priority in the short term will be to keep executing the strategy consistently. And the fact that we are so strong financially, means that we can do that despite the high level of economic uncertainty in the shorter term. And let me conclude with a few comments regarding the short-term outlook. Although clearly we typically do not provide any quantified guidance at this point in the year. Typically we do that at the time of the shareholders' meeting at the end of April. At the same time we provide the quarterly update for the first quarter, and there is obviously no reason to deviate from that practice today. What I can repeat, though, is that we have seen no slowdown in the demand in our key markets at the end of last year, nor have we seen any significant change in the ordering patterns of our key customers. And while the visibility is somewhat more limited than it was a year ago in many segments, I can also add that our order books remain in good shape, in particular in automotive catalysts. And anticipating perhaps your questions, the availability of recycling supply remains strong. We need to remain cautious, of course, at this stage, as it's a bit too early to tell how the Eurozone crisis will unfold and what effect that may have on the economy. And you should also bear in mind that we are somewhat sensitive to metal prices, some of which are hedged for 2012 and partly for 2013, and some of which, as you know, cannot be hedged. Finally, and considering our policy of not scaling back dividends, the fact that the board proposed a dividend increase should be seen as a strong sign of our confidence in short, mid, and long-term perspectives for the company. And having said that, I would like to open now the floor to questions.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our Q&A session. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you will enter a queue. So once again, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. And our first question comes from the line of Rupesh Madlani from Barclays Capital London. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Three questions from me, please. First, could you comment on the competition you now see in the battery recycling segment and how confident you feel about your UHT technology to continue giving you a competitive edge? Second, you made the comment just now on dividend growth. Can you talk a little bit about your preference between or your perspective between share buybacks, dividend growth, special dividends, and more broadly, if you continue to struggle to find any exciting areas for you to make acquisitions in? And lastly, I noted in the results that you mentioned pre-qualification work with a number of car manufacturers for recycling of batteries. Do you expect to sign any contracts with respect to that in the coming year? Thanks.
Okay, so let me start with the first question. The competitive landscape in battery recycling is by and large unchanged or has not seen major changes in the last few months. And bear in mind that the competitive landscape is somewhat of a theoretical landscape as the business is not yet existing. And so you should also bear that in mind when describing technology edges. So typically we describe Umicore as being the undisputed technology leader in a market that has yet to emerge. So it will take a number of years before that a market reaches a certain degree of maturity, and this means that there is still time for the competitive landscape to shape up. This being said, we are extremely well positioned in this business because we have a unique proposition to car and battery manufacturers, being the only player out there in the field, being able to offer both the battery materials for new applications as well as the treatment solution for end-of-life products. And that is something that is not yet so much ingrained in a majority of car manufacturers or not accepted widely, but it's a model that is starting to develop nicely and that eventually will prevail because it's also the only model that offers a full traceability of the materials being used in the entire value chain. And as regulations and legislation continue to develop, I also believe that this model will become far more of a competitive differentiator in the future. Is the UHT technology edge confirmed? I think it's a bit too early to say that. We believe it is. However, as I mentioned in the presentation, we have now engaged in a testing phase, in a fairly extensive testing phase that will take us that will take the better part of the next 18 months, and where we will fine-tune the process and indeed test material streams, including spent rechargeable batteries. And it's only upon completion of this testing phase that we will be able to fully measure the quality of the process, the yields at industrial scale, and the competitive advantages it gives us over the existing competitors. Now, from what I see in the market, most of the competitors that we may be facing today are less advanced. They are mostly working at lab scale still, and only a very small minority of them are moving to pilot or industrial scale. Moving to your second question regarding dividend or the use, I would say the capital allocation in general and the use of cash for dividend versus share buyback or acquisitions. Let me first start by saying that acquisitions are indeed and continue to be on the agenda, and we may, depending on how market conditions and equity markets in particular develop in the course of the year, we may see more opportunities coming up. However, I think it's a bit too early to tell, and we'll continue to watch and monitor a certain number of developments and watch the development of a certain number of targets that we have in mind. The dividend policy is there to be applied consistently, so we'll continue to either grow or pay a stable dividend, either grow the dividend or pay a stable dividend, depending on how the results are developing. And if indeed there is excess cash that cannot be immediately used for acquisitions and the market conditions are favorable, we will continue to buy back shares. And finally, your last question about contracts with car manufacturers for battery recycling. We do have a number of contracts already, and yes, I expect that we will continue to make progress and that a certain number of new contracts will be secured in the next 12 to 18 months.
Very good. If I could just follow up on what kind of size of acquisitions, could you comment, are these kind of bolt-on acquisitions or more substantial?
Well, it can be both, actually, and I would say with the kind of balance sheet and cash flow generation potential that we have quite a bit of a firing power and possibilities, I would say. Please bear in mind that we want to remain investment grade at any point in time in the cycle, because this is also what helps us, what enables us fund growth projects throughout the cycle and irrespective of the shorter-term economic conditions. So that will remain a condition, but that leaves quite a lot of headroom compared to the level of debt that we have today and the level of cash flows that we have today. So it could be both bolt-on or more substantial acquisitions, I would say.
Very helpful. Thank you.
And our next question comes from the line of Andrew Stott of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mark. Just a question on, well, two actually, sorry. First one is on auto catalysts. The second half margin fell, and to be fair, it did in the previous year relative to the first half. Can you remind me, is that just a normal sequence? Because I guess when you look at the top line in the second half, it's a very good number. And one would have thought rare earth costs, maybe substrate costs, were also coming down. So I was a bit surprised to see the margin down to the extent it was in the second half, but maybe that's just me missing the normal seasonality. Can you just run me through some of your thoughts on that particular performance? And then the second question was on the recycling side. So you referred to, obviously, this new assaying facility coming on stream. Can you give an idea of you know, when there might be this step change, therefore, in your ability to have greater flexibility on throughput? So I'm just trying to get an idea of the chronology on that. Thank you.
Okay, so let me start with the margins in the catalyst business. And first of all, I would like to maybe caution you about extrapolations from very short-term figures. So I would not extrapolate too much from quarterly or half-year data in a way, especially in a business where developments are really taking place over a longer period of time. This being said, we have here a very special situation in a way, because you mentioned that the substrate and rare earth costs were coming down in the second half. Actually, what happened in practice is that there was the recovery of rare earth price increase was actually not well balanced between the two semesters. And with the growth of our DPF business, diesel particulate filter business, actually what we saw is that the element of pass-through was higher in the second part of the year. So revenues grew a bit faster than in the first part of the year because of the higher pass-through element for both filters and rare earth price, and that is neutral in terms of bottom line because it's pure pass-through. And I wouldn't make any other extrapolation from that because you have this you have a certain degree of imbalance between the two semesters because of the pass-through components. In recycling, in order to really, you know that we're working on two tracks. One is to continue to increase capacity year in, year out in the existing facility. And the second track is in the longer term to establish new facilities to address new input streams and new blends. Now, regarding the first track, which is the ongoing expansion and marginal expansion of the capacity, there are a number of projects in the pipeline that will be relevant in this respect. One is the expansion of our sampling and assaying facility, as you mentioned it. The other one is the modernization of our water treatment, the expansion of our water treatment capacity and facilities. And there are a couple of other investments that will be required in the next 2 years in order to support a further expansion of the existing capacity. So it will probably take another 3 years or so in total before you can see something meaningful or impactful, I would say.
Okay, thank you very much.
And our next question comes from the line of Jan van den Bosch from Petercam. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Three questions, if I may, from my side. First of all, picking on an answer you gave previously on the UHT testing phase, you mentioned it would take the better part of the next 18 months. Does that then also mean that any decision on the next step, I would say, in the strategic development would only come thereafter, or would you already be able to take some kind of a strategic decision based on an intermediary review of this this testing facility? That's the first one. Secondly, within Catalysis, the HDD contracts will start to make an impact as of this year. Could you be could you provide maybe some light on whether this impact would already be somewhat material in the course of the year, whether that will be mostly towards the end of the year? Any indication there would be helpful. And finally, within Energy Materials, you mentioned a few headwinds in 2011. Could you maybe quantify or qualify the impact of the startup costs and the currency headwinds? Thank you.
Okay, so the timeline for the UHT rollout is exactly the same as the one I described a few months ago and a year ago. We need first to complete the testing phase before we can make a decision on the next step, on the next investment step, which will be a full-scale industrial facility. It is unlikely that an intermediate decision would be made in that respect before the test phase is completed in the next 18 months. However, in the meantime, there is quite a bit of preparatory work that is being done in order to actually speed up the execution of the decision once it will be made. But please bear in mind that We're talking about very long-term projects. It takes many years to get the technology, I would say, where you want it to be in terms of performance in lab and pilot facilities first, and then it takes two and a half years to build a new smelter, if that is the decision that is being made, plus some time to ramp it up once the smelter is there. So no change compared to what I described last year, and decision likely to be made once the test phase is duly completed. Let me now move to your question about the HDD contract and the impact thereof this year. As I mentioned earlier, it is not going to be material because the most of the ramp-up is going to start in 2013 as far as our Euro 6 contracts are concerned. And you may recall that I mentioned in the past that we're more successful in Europe in Asia in terms of contract wins. So the ramp-up that we're going to see in Europe is going to start really to be meaningful in 2013. And I would also need to add that in China, for instance, we hear about delays in the enforcement or implementation of the new standards, so that may also push back somewhat some of the new business ramp-up there. So do not expect anything really material in terms of contribution in the course of this year. As we mentioned earlier, you will need to be a little bit more patient there. And in terms of the energy materials headwinds, no, I cannot really provide you with more details about the impacts, the currency impacts, or the effect of the business that was lost or delayed because of the natural disasters in Japan and the U.S. Suffice to say that it is pretty material. And especially, I would like to remind you that what is very material is the amount of qualification work, startup work that is being done, and we continue to intensify, as you can see from the segment figures, we continue to intensify our R&D efforts in energy materials, and this is likely to continue in the coming months and years. And there is also quite a bit of additional depreciation that is going to percolate through the P&L shortly with the new investments coming on stream.
If I can pick in on that last answer, so that implies that the R&D spending within energy materials will continue to increase or stay at least at the level of 2011?
It is likely to increase further.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Arno Husens from Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Mark. I have two questions. First of all, could you give more details on the diesel catalyst business that you mentioned in your press release in Japan? I was wondering if this is a one-off linked to the tsunami, or if it's, you know, business as usual, or, you know, you're getting market share. And the second one, could you explain how you managed, you know, working capital in the second half? I think, you know, the net debt that you reported was well below what I was expecting, and I was just wondering if there was anything that happened in December, or if you could explain, give some more details on that. Thanks.
Okay, the diesel business in Japan now is regular business. It's not a one-off that would result from the production shifts from the first to the second half. It's regular business. Indeed, we make progress in improving our position with Japanese OEMs, and that is translated in certain business wins in Japan and outside of Japan for Japanese OEMs. As far as the working capital is concerned, if you look, you know that our working capital is somewhat sensitive to metal prices and precious metals prices in particular. And if you look at the metal prices trends in the second half of the year, there was some decreases for some of them. And so that has had a favorable impact in terms of working capital requirements. And also, the fact is that working capital requirements increased a lot in 2010 and in the first part of last year because of the fast revenue growth and the strong metal prices. But then revenue growth was by and large, are stable in the second half, so was, would not be a factor of explanation of new needs.
Can I just have a follow-up on that, or basically on the metal price? Can you give some indication? I mean, because you've hedged, you've mentioned that you hedged 2012 and 2013 part of your production. Can you give some flavor on how much for 2012 is hedged? How much of your how much of your production is hedged on relatively high prices of 2011?
Well, first of all, please bear in mind that with what we can hedge is only precious metals and some base metals prices, because in the most of the majority of metals that we recover in our recycling processes are actually not hedgeable, or sometimes they can be hedged back to back with the customer or the supplier. But other than that, there is no market, there is no paper market for most metals. So for those metals that can be hedged, that is most precious metals with the notable exception of rhodium, a significant portion of the contracts are, the supply contracts, the recycling contracts are hedged for 2012, a lower proportion for 2013, of course. And there is no major difference or no dramatic difference in pricing between 2011 and 2012 in that respect.
Okay, thank you very much.
And our next question comes from the line of Tony Jones from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for taking questions. I've got two. Firstly, on the refining division, you mentioned that you've got higher volumes, higher price, and improved mix. Does that effectively mean that we're at peak earnings? So over the medium term, how can we expect, or how should we think about earnings improving over the medium term? And then related to that, on slide 24, you say higher margins have resulted from a change in mix. Could you give us a bit more color in terms of what that means, or is it just a bit more e-scrap? And therefore, over time, if we assume that you will benefit from more e-scrap recycling, can we improve? Can we factor in improving margins over the cycle? Thanks.
Okay. First of all, I think we have to keep things in proportion and in context when we talk about improving earnings and improving margins, given the current level of margins and profitability, which are, of course, I would say, which have no comparable elsewhere in the world in any other business. So I think we have to keep that in mind, of course. Have we reached the peak? I don't know. I mean, the same question could have been raised 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago, because this combination of higher prices, higher process volumes, and a favorable mix is something that we have seen before already. So I'm not so sure this is the leading indicator of a peak in the business. Supply conditions continue to be good for the time being. As we mentioned before, we have a better visibility in recycling than in most other businesses, given the length of the contracts and the amount of the material that is available on site before processing, actually. I wouldn't talk of a peak. Of course, if the world economy would collapse tomorrow and industrial production would come to a halt, that would have an impact on our feed in recycling. And then, with hindsight, I would tell you it was a peak. But other than that, if market conditions remain where they were in 2011, I see no reason to expect that this was an unusual conjunction of favorable factors. So that's one. And secondly, regarding the mix itself, as you pointed out, it's partly the change is partly the result of a higher proportion of electronic scrap, and this is a business that is well supported by legislation. And also it's a business which has good economics because the value but the sheer value of the metals that are contained in the scrap is so high that it's worthwhile recovering. So it's e-scrap. It is also a higher proportion of complex mine residues, and where the for which the market, I would say, conditions are extremely good given the supply and demand balance currently, and a number of other materials in the mix that have proven very favorable in terms of margins, and some of them being recyclable end-of-life products.
Thanks very much.
And our next question comes from Adam Collins of Liberum Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Mark. Good afternoon. I had four questions, if I may. The first one's a financial one. In the recent past, Martin has talked about the potential for the tax rate to go up to a more normalized level as the tax losses become fully extinguished. And I wondered whether that's going to be a factor in the next year or two. Do you think the tax rate is going to head up more to the mid-20s, or is that not going to be a factor in the near to medium term? That's the first question.
Yes, and indeed, you should expect a slight increase already in 2012, or we do expect a slight increase already in 2012 of the effective tax rate, and the first increases beyond 20, as some of the tax assets that we have currently would be utilized. Yep.
Yeah. Do you have a sense, Mark, where the sort of the natural rate is? Where are we going to end up once all of those tax losses are extinguished?
Yeah. Difficult to give you something. I mean, an accurate view on that, but I would say in a range between 25% and 28%, probably.
Right. Okay.
In the long term.
Yep, okay. And then on the sort of trading side, you touched on the fact that cobalt powders saw destocking in the fourth quarter. I wondered if you'd seen any restocking effects through the first few weeks of this year. And then also,
Can I take one question at a time?
Yeah, sure.
Yep. No, not yet. We have not seen yet the restocking in the first few weeks of this year. Of course, part of our business is in Asia, and as you know, the Chinese New Year was a bit earlier this year than in prior years. So it was in January. So January was a quiet month for certain businesses as far as the Asian sales were concerned. So it's actually too early to tell, and. In several businesses where customers are adjusting inventories, it is indeed too early to tell whether this is just due to tight inventory management or any more fundamental change in the underlying demand.
Right, okay. Thank you for that. And then on the battery materials side, I mean, you're clearly excited about the development of NMC materials for the automotive sector, but you've alluded in the last few quarters to competitive pressures on the small format side. And I wondered if you could just give us an update on whether there'd been any material change in the second half in the competitiveness of that space and what kind of dynamic you expect going into the coming year. This is on the small format side.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, the trend is mostly unchanged. So we see a significant volume growth driven by the applications that I mentioned earlier in high-end portable electronics and in automotive. And at the same time, we see continued strong pressure on prices, and in electronics, definitely. But also, I mentioned a while ago that in automotive, it was important also to somehow find the right trade-off between prices and volumes, as we want to help our customers make their electrified vehicles more affordable. And so, also, I would say that. The price points are not yet at the optimum level.
Mm. Yeah, okay, thank you. And then finally from me, you said some interesting things about the initiatives to develop the core business in recycling, the three initiatives which over time will develop operations,
yep.
The water treatment, the development of the assay side. and then other initiatives which you didn't reveal.
Yep.
To what extent is that actually going to result in an increase in your ability to process volume? I mean, I would have thought the water side is more kind of environmental compliance than something that's going to help you grow volumes. And I'm not entirely sure about the Asean sample as well, which is obviously going to increase the service offer.
It's a combination because I would say the for a number of facilities that we have in our recycling operation in Hoboken were designed for a lower level of activity at the plant. And because you know that we actually built this plant over the years with the investments being phased between 1996 or so and today. And so we have to adjust the infrastructure and some of the support facilities constantly because of the continuous debottlenecking and process improvements. But that's what I meant. And indeed, in some cases, some of the utilities or facilities are getting to are getting to full capacity and would not allow for higher volumes.
Right. Okay. Can you give us any sense of what that means for volume?
No, I think it's too early to say that.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mark.
And our next question comes from Joe Dewhurst from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just want to ask, on collection rates for electronic scrap, is there any visibility on where that's at in Europe and maybe how that's grown, say, in the last year? And then I suppose internationally as well, if there's any moves from a legislation point of view, particularly in the U.S., and if we're getting any improvement on collection there. Thanks very much.
Joe, the data exists, but I don't have it readily available with me now, but that's something that we can dig out and provide at a later stage. Now, regarding legislation, I mean the data on collection rates, huh? So we'll provide that later. Regarding legislation, there is limited progress in regions outside of Europe, I must say. There are discussions advancing very well in the United States in particular regarding how to organize the entire recycling chain for electronic devices. So I think it's making progress, but not yet turning into legislation. So that's a bit too early indeed. And Europe clearly remains at the forefront of legislative development. It's now time to make sure that it's duly enforced.
But we expect to see continued growth on that this year, I guess.
We expect continued growth in the short, mid, and long term for that input stream, and I believe it's going to be over time. It's going to become massive over time.
Thank you.
And our next question comes from Neil Tyler of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Just referring back to one of the earlier questions that Andrew asked about the operating leverage, but across the other businesses outside of catalysis, you mentioned in your opening comments that you know the reason for the full year EBIT improvement was principally revenue growth. But if you look across each of the divisions, the trend within first half versus second half in terms of revenue growth versus EBIT growth is in opposite directions for all four divisions, in fact, not just for catalysis. Now, I wondered if you've given us a good explanation as to why that is in the catalysis business, but I wonder if you could touch on the other three and try and help me understand the leverage that's taking place or otherwise in those businesses. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you need to separate the full year comments from the half year analysis. And the comment that I gave initially was a comment on the full year results, and the question that you raised now is about the half year, the second half development. Indeed, so I've indeed addressed the question regarding as far as the catalyst business is concerned, and in the other businesses you have sometimes very specific situations. I mentioned in energy materials that we continue to intensify our research efforts or qualification work And, of course, you also have the depreciation of the new facilities that is starting to hit the bottom line faster than revenues do ramp up. And I mentioned a while ago that this was going to be or to develop along those lines, and that we would continue to intensify these development efforts, whether it's for rechargeable battery materials or for the rotary targets or other PV related applications. So this is something that you should expect indeed that in the next few years that there will be fairly intensive development work, large investments, and the revenue ramp up will is not necessarily synchronized with that. In performance materials, you have a very specific situation. We have there the impact of the non-consolidated contribution from Element 6 abrasives, which distorts the year-on-year and the half-year comparisons of results. Because other than that, there is, I think, nothing abnormal in the if you only look at the fully consolidated businesses, there is nothing I would say special to be reported in terms of EBIT versus revenue development. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And in recycling, again, I would not extrapolate from very short term conclusions, and revenues are sometimes in many of our businesses not the best. Or the EBIT margin on revenue is not, in some of our businesses, the best metric to utilize, because it is sometimes distorted by pass-through elements.
Thank you. I wonder if I could just follow up with a quick question on the zinc battery materials business. You mentioned in the commentary in your release this morning the structural headwinds that are facing that business, and I wonder if you could share some of your thoughts on how you see that developing and measures that perhaps you think you might be able to take in order to address those structural issues.
Indeed. First of all, it's a fairly small business, and so we're talking about the zinc powders, very special powders that are used in alkaline, non-rechargeable batteries. And clearly, there is what we produce are high-end materials going into high-performance alkaline branded batteries mostly. And clearly, there is we notice a shift in technology choices being made by certain players in that business, and an increased focus on cost to the detriment of performance of the battery, and that I would say is also dictating some product choices in the segment. So it's a trend that is not supportive for the mid to long term, and we will adjust our business configuration. We'll have to adjust our business configuration accordingly.
Thank you very much.
There are currently no more questions in the queue. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you that you can ask a question by pressing 01 on your telephone keypad. And we have a question from Adam Collins from Liberum Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just a very quick one again on the working capital issue. I mean, you mentioned that lower metal prices helps the working capital balance. One of your peers based in the UK was talking about the fact that some customers also consigned more metal as prices fell in the third and fourth quarter. I wondered if you'd seen any sort of trend like that, more metal coming from customers on consignment for the AutoCam business.
I would have to check, Adam. I'm not sure. I would have to check the figures.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, something maybe we can address next week when we meet.
Yep, okay. No problem. Thank you.
And we have a question from Mark van der Heest from ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Small question also on working capital. I was wondering if you could comment whether you did any factoring in the second half of the year that could partly explain the strong improvement in the net debt and working capital. Thank you.
The answer is no.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a question from Richard Logan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Okay, thanks for taking my question. It was just a follow-up on your comment earlier with regards to the rare earth pass-through. You commented that there had been an increased amount and consequently there had been a negative impact on the margin. In terms of that rare earth pass-through, is there a lag on that? Just because it didn't seem to really make sense in terms of the rare earth price movement. And then secondly, on NMC cathode demand, I wondered if you're able to break out approximately or say how much is coming from the electric vehicles market. And then finally, just on precious metal supply, I know that you said that the supply had still been very strong, but has there been any subsequent change in mix with the decline in precious metal prices? Thanks.
Okay, so let me start with the last question, as long as it's fresh in my mind. No, we don't see major shifts in the mix currently. I would say despite some changes in metal prices. That may still be the case in the future, of course, but we don't see that today. I must admit, I'm sorry for that I missed your second question.
It was just on the NMC cathode demand. How much is coming from electric vehicles?
I actually wouldn't want to go into that level of detail in breaking down the demand. I would say explicitly, suffice to say that the demand for coming from electric vehicles is taking off very nicely. And that explains, to a large extent, the growth that we see in the business. Yeah.
Okay.
And as far as the rare earth oxides are concerned, please bear in mind that what we utilize in our products are not rare earth, but rare earth oxides. So the price developments that you see in the press are those of rare earth, not rare earth oxides. So what you could consider as abnormal developments, referring to my comments, are actually to be explained by the fact that we're not looking at the same thing.
I see. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
And our next question comes from Dominic Fraundienst from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon. Dominic Fraundienst from Citigroup. Just one question on coming back to M&A and given the strength of the balance sheet. You said you would like to retain investment grade. Can you give us an indication of terms of net gearing you were willing to take on the balance sheet at the moment? We've got about 12 or 13%. Any color on the potential net gearing you'd feel comfortable with would be greatly appreciated. Thanks.
I would revert back to my previous answer, a gearing that corresponds to investment grade. And actually, it's a combination of gearing and net debt relative to EBITDA and some other, I would say, metrics that are used by the banking community. So I don't have a specific answer on the net gearing. But I would say maybe to use a rule of thumb, I would say that we can easily go to 2.5 times EBITDA while securing our investment grade status.
Perfect, thanks.
There are no more questions in the queue. Gentlemen, do you wish to begin closing comments?
Yes, thank you. I will do so. And I would like to thank you for attending the call and for the quality of your questions. And if you have further questions, please, as usual, feel free to contact our investor relations. And Geoff Raskin, who is sitting in front of me, will be more than happy to field your questions. His body language is confirming that. And, of course, we'll have the chance to see each other and to talk probably in more depth in the coming days or weeks as we meet during the road shows, and I look forward to that. So thank you again, and see you soon.